Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's Friday. It is Friday, and you are listening to the Front Three. Me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Welcome back.
Delighted to be joined by Rory Jennings from the Chelsea Fans Channel from France. Where are you right now, Rory?
Right now, I'm in my hotel. I'm in a hotel just on the actually, my window looks out onto Lille Stadium.
Oh, lovely.
Very nice. So so just waited to head home, really.
You're obviously out there following England. Obviously, fantastic win yesterday. We spoke on the TFR live show. A very different reaction at halftime to full-time, Rory.
Oh, no, I am pretty embarrassed about what some of the stuff I said. I was caught up in the moment. It was just torturous because that first half was nothing short of a disgrace. And we've been looking forward to a tournament for 2 years, and it felt like we were going to be out of it in a game and a half. So, but you know, there's no place in football for calling people names, and I shouldn't have done that.
I believe the words were senile old idiot. You called Roy Hodgson.
It's probably slightly too. I'd like to say it was a joke, but yeah, there's a lot of truth is said in jest as well.
At the same time, you know, obviously, as you said, that first half performance was relatively poor, going down 1-0. That Gareth Bale free kick, Joe Hart probably should have saved that. Has to be said, but Hodgson did show some boldness really at halftime, brought on both Jamie Vardy and Daniel Sturridge, and it worked out for him, right?
It did, and I think that you're being quite generous to Hodgson there to say he showed some boldness. I think he was boxed into a corner. England were holding on, you know, we were holding on to the tournament by the skin of our necks, and what else can you do? You're losing a game, you need to score goals, you need to score more than one goal, so he put on three forwards, but that isn't tactical brilliance. That's just, anybody would do that. You need to score goals, put on forwards. It's simple equations. I don't think that Hodgson deserves too much credit for that.
Well, in a way, it is tactical brilliance. But what you're saying is, it's not sort of he's not thought through that tactical brilliance. He's sort of he's been forced to roll the dice essentially, and you'd rather be in a situation where he didn't have to roll.
Exactly. Because England, the players at Hodgson's disposal shouldn't be going in a goal down to Wales like that. You know, I'm not taking anything away from the Welsh. I think they played well, but I don't think they had a shot on target aside from the goal. They're not a good team. They mustered and played well and played beyond themselves, but on paper England should have had that game sewn up easily, and the fact that they didn't, I think, comes down to the management.
But is it also a little bit, is there a sense of almost like the FA Cup a bit about it? And this was definitely an exceptional game, because again it's almost, well, it is a derby, isn't it? So for me, I keep thinking about it, there's elements of the FA Cup. You know, Albania managing to hold on for such a long time, and people use sort of similar tropes, if you like.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's this tournament, you know, tournament football is played like exciting cup ties, and that's why we love it. You know, that's why we look forward to it so much. Like I said before, we've been looking forward to coming to France for 2 years, and a performance like that is just unacceptable. So, but yeah, we got the result. The crucial thing is that we got the result, and sometimes, like, nothing's going to change my mind regarding Hodgson. I don't think he's the right man for the job. No. But sometimes good things happen under the wrong management. You know, Manchester United won the FA Cup, and I think most United fans would say that Van Gaal was the wrong man, but he managed to win the FA Cup. So there is a template for this. So fingers crossed we can get somewhere.
Big win, and obviously more historic, because it's actually the first time England have ever won a game at a major tournament having trailed at half time. So it is a big result. But I think the words you used, Rory, were papering over the cracks, essentially.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. You know, scoring a last minute winner against the Welsh was wonderful, and I went bonkers, as did every other Englishman in the stadium. It was fantastic. Loved it. But it just should not be in that position. And I think now the euphoria has worn down, we can analyse exactly what happened in that game. It wasn't good enough. On any level, it wasn't good enough. I mean, certain individual performances weren't up to scratch. Others were masterful. You know, I thought the fullbacks really were brilliant. A fair play to the Tottenham boys there. But overall, it wasn't good enough. And I think if we analyse why, I think the buck stops with Hodgson every time.
What of Raheem Sterling, Lawrence? Because obviously he came off at halftime for Daniel Sturridge, I believe. And obviously that worked out, that substitution. But getting a lot of criticism. He's only 21 years old, but it feels like, you know, a player of such promise a few years ago at Liverpool, he's almost stagnated, it feels like.
I think at Liverpool there was a very different situation for him. Maybe he sort of lost his way a little bit at Man City. It was very unusual when the Premier League made highlights of his season that it was video barely lasted a minute. But I think the thing with him is, you know, we've seen the revolution with Kingsley Coman, or the evolution with him. He's been fantastic. You know, he seemed to basically want to progress his career. And, you know, obviously he couldn't do that where he was, so he had to go somewhere where he could. I wonder whether the same will happen when Pep Guardiola meets with Sterling, and they both manage to find out how he can be exactly like Kingsley Coman, but better.
Obviously, Harry Kane, the other man coming off, Rory, has to be said, he was sort of starved of service, really. Obviously, the substitution worked, but obviously the system changed, which benefited both Vardy and Sturridge. So I don't want to be too harsh on Kane.
I think we can be quite harsh on him, only because of the high standards that he's created for himself this season. I think we have to judge Harry Kane by his outstanding season, and therefore his contribution to this England campaign so far hasn't been good enough. That's not to say that he isn't solely responsible. He hasn't been given the service. It's just Harry Kane, in his pomp, creates chances for himself. He doesn't rely on other people creating chances for him, and he hasn't been doing that. Therefore, I think the substitution was actually correct.
I'd like to see him play alongside another striker, though, to have someone paired up top of him, like Vardy and Sturridge were in that second half. Regardless,
I think you're dreaming. Remember who's in charge.
who would you like to see start the next game against Slovakia on Monday? Would you go for Sturridge and Vardy?
I think it's very difficult. I think it's such a great problem to have, but it is something that is very difficult to give a definitive correct answer here, because I think Harry Kane is definitely the best striker out of the three. That is, for me, unquestionable. What then makes it very tricky is that the other boys score the goals, and football being a meritocracy, I said it again, but you have to go with the players who scored the goals, and therefore I think Harry Kane may... I think Hodgson will bring him back, but I think that we should go with the two players that scored the goals just.
Okay, interesting. The other sort of debate that emerged, Lawrence, was Dele Alli, another Spurs player who maybe didn't quite perform as people were hoping. A lot of people calling for Jack Wilshere to come in his place, despite the fact that everyone was quite upset that Jack Wilshere was included in the squad in the first place. I mean, who would you like to see start against Slovakia out of those two?
I'd like to see... that's a good question. Who would I like
tough,
to see? To be honest, I'd like to see Dele Alli continued, but I
did
maybe I a half realize, and a half.
Yeah, I didn't realise at the time, but he set up Daniel Sturridge. His work in the box is a little sort of drag back into Sturridge's path. So I'm not, you know, obviously he didn't have a massive influence in the game for the majority of it, but I think it's harsh to sort of, you know, want to all of a sudden drop him for Wilshere.
But I mean, I do also feel a bit like, this is the thing, is we're criticising so many teams for being bad, or, you know, sort of struggling against sides who sit very deep and don't play very expansive football. I feel like that's just a little bit harsh on some players, because, you know, Wales went out there with a very clear idea. And, you know, it would be, if that was the Premier League, I think a lot of people would see it very differently, but because it's tournament football and it seems all very much on the edge, I think people see it differently. Would Jack Wilshere have been able to open up that game? Well, we'll never know. But I still think that Dele Alli deserves that opportunity.
I think it's very difficult sometimes. I think Lawrence has hit the nail on the head there, because the two players who you've highlighted of potentially having their places in jeopardy are the two players who take the most risks. They're the two players who you know, Raheem Sterling, every time he picks a ball up, he looks to go forward, he looks to beat a man. And simply by the nature of being that player means you are going to be dispossessed and lose possession. Dele Alli, the same thing. Therefore, you can't have a go at these players for losing the ball, because if it comes off what they're trying to do, you probably score, as you pointed out with Dele Alli's assist for the goal. I think we have to be more, we have to give them a bit more liberty and allow them to occasionally get dispossessed, because what they're trying to do is the magnificence. When you're trying to achieve the penetrating run or the skipping past a man, odds are you won't do it, because it's very difficult, and that's why these players are in such a, you know, such a high regard.
Mm.
I think that to you know, Sterling hasn't been good enough and Alli wasn't good enough, but let's not be too impulsive here. They're excellent football players who have the ability to change games and win you games. So let's be a bit more just a bit more forgiving
to these multimillionaires.
what about a word on Wales, Roy? I mean, what did you make of them? Because obviously they got that first goal. In the second half, they just seemed to sit back completely. Maybe they should have been more positive.
I think perhaps they should have done. I mean, they suffered from what England suffered from when we played against Russia. If England had gone for that 2-0 for the second goal, I think we'd have probably got it and therefore won the game and been in a far stronger position than we are now. I think Wales did the same thing. I think they were delighted to get the goal. I think they were aware that there was a chasm in quality, though, in all honesty, and therefore they got the goal and tried to preserve what they had. And a draw would have suited them perfectly, and they were a minute away from having it. So I understand why they sat back. But I hope Wales go through. I genuinely hope they go through, and I don't see why they won't.
I think they will. Yeah.
I think they can.
I think they can definitely do it, and I want them to. I'd like to see them doing well. But they're so average. They're such an average team. I mean, if you look across the team, as soon as you take out, if you keep hold of Bale, do your best to keep Ramsey quiet, you are then looking at a very, very average side, and that's why I think that this. I don't know, euphoria that seems to be going around this result among England support. Like, when I left the stadium yesterday, Lille was just mobbed with jubilant England fans. And although I was part of that, although I'm delighted, like, come on, lads, this would Wales be a Premier League team?
No, but at the same time, you know, would Romania be a Premier League team? Would Albania be a Premier League team?
No, absolutely not. But I wouldn't suggest that we should go crazy. Like, if it took us a last-minute goal to beat Albania, I'd be saying the same thing. We can't get carried away. If we had played Italy yesterday, and this is a very weakened Italy, you know, it's arguably the worst Italian team for 50 years. But if we had done what we did to Italy under their fantastic manager, then perhaps I would understand this euphoria and belief. But there needs to be a bit of perspective here. This is hugely papering over the cracks. And I'm delighted with the result, but there's a huge but attached to it.
Let's see if we can get a win against Slovakia then, and hopefully a better performance. Before we let you go, Roy, because I know you've got a Eurostar to catch, I just want to talk a little bit about the atmosphere out there and sort of how it is on the ground. Because the first few days, obviously, we saw all the chaos, and we've sort of been talking about that on the podcast, but I just wanted to get your sort of first-hand experience. I mean, it seems a lot calmer in the last few days.
Yes, the atmosphere yesterday was actually a joy to be there, and a testament to how well English and British fans can behave. It was completely mixed, English and Welsh fans having lots of singing similar songs, having jests between the two, but it was completely peaceful and really, 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 really nice to be there. Previously in Marseille, it was obviously a different story. It was carnage, and while I would never say that the English fans were completely innocent, they were certainly on the receiving end, and it was unlike anything I've ever seen before. It was a throwback to what I imagine visiting sort of the old Den in 1976 would have been like. It really was appalling, and it was coordinated. I think that was the scariest thing. English football support can be bad. I'm not an apologist at all, but English football support can be bad, but it isn't coordinated attacks. It's antisocial behaviour. It's things that are completely unacceptable, but it's invading a town square and taking it over. It's sometimes leering at women. It's sometimes throwing bottles. It's sometimes having fights. All things that are absolutely out of order and never acceptable, but it's not coordinated. It isn't a militia group. prowling the streets, hoping to find some English people. And it was predators and prey. It really was. And I've honestly never seen anything like it. So like when people are leaving the house and they're packing gum shields and GoPros and things, you've got to start then thinking, like, English fans didn't do that. English fans go into a town square and behave less than chivalrously. What the Russian fellas did over there is unlike anything I think tournament football has ever seen before.
Well, there's a big difference between the two. Like, what definitely occurs to me while you're saying that is that the England fans, maybe there wasn't such a deliberate side to that. You know, they basically got drunk, and there's no apology for that. They got drunk and did really stupid things. Whereas this was a calculating, worryingly calculating attack from the Russians.
Exactly.
And sort of weirdly aggressive. Because
incredibly aggressive, and also brilliantly executed. Like, brilliantly executed.
Yeah, well done on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You sound like the Russian sports minister.
Yeah. How brilliantly executed. He was at the side, just this was brilliantly executed, lads. Who's got a GoPro on? Get me on camera. Has anyone else seen that van? I don't know if it's a real van because it looks a bit
the heterosexuals.
The heterosexual van.
It says. I put a video up of it yesterday. I got some fantastic news on that front.
Go on,
Lawrence. You'll love it.
Good.
I drove past it yesterday, and I was looking out my window, and we're on the way to Lille, and I've gone past it. I've gone to the cab driver. I'm like, mate, you have to go back round. It had been completely graffitied.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. Just unity colours, you know, like the rainbow colours and stuff.
Good.
So we went back round. I put a little video. Sadly, I was slightly scared filming it, obviously, because people who have a van like that probably wouldn't enjoy the length of my shorts.
What, the Russian heterosexuals, Rory?
Went back round, and yeah, I put a little video. There's a video on our on the Chelsea fans channel Twitter of just like the Russian lads cleaning off the rainbow.
Oh god,
brilliant!
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I mean, that definitely is a phrase that I never thought I'd hear. Russian heterosexuals cleaning off the rainbow. That is
definitely go and check out that video on Chelsea fans channel. Roy, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Go and catch that train, mate. We'll speak to you.
Thank
soon.
You. Thank you so much for having us. I love this podcast, guys.
Cheers, man. See you later.
See you later.
You could do a little cut there.
Okay. Oh,
let me just think
good
about
direction.
Yeah, you do a cut there.
You do a cut, right? And perfect. Then I will. I'm going to leave all this in.
What did you make of the game then? I mean, interesting what Rory's saying there. Although, you know, fantastic result. He's sort of recognizing the failures there. And I like that phrase, papering over the cracks, because as you said, it is a roll of the dice, really. And you do get the impression sometimes that England don't really know, or Roy Hodgson doesn't know the best way to set out this team. You know, all of a sudden, Wayne Rooney's playing in midfield, Sterling starting. There's decisions maybe that make you think that Roy Hodgson doesn't have a coherent plan yet. And that's reinforced when he throws on Vardy and Sturridge and they win against Wales coming from behind.
I think we said this pre-tournament, damned if you do and damned if you don't. And I agree with what Rory's saying. And I think, you know, papering over the cracks is right. But at the same time, I think that's slightly an approach that you have to take during a tournament, because it's the necessity of a tournament.
Mm.
You're going in and you're seeing the environment when you get there. You know, we don't know how Wales were going to start the tournament. If Wales had started awfully and then we'd have had this game, it would have been even worse. But the fact is that Wales are in pretty confident mood. They were always going to be playing up to England. The same with Russia, and I think the same with Slovakia, because England are still a big head to take in the tournament. And I think that maybe where I see where Rory's coming from, because what he's saying is with these players, you should be ready for a tournament. We should be much more confident. But I think that perception also comes
with LinkedIn Jobs. We tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From outside. I don't know how much that comes from the England camp itself.
Yeah, I just feel on the inside, Roy Hodgson should know what his best team is. And I just feel like quite clear he doesn't.
Not Roy. That's you.
But the evidence on the pitch it seems that Roy Hodgson doesn't know what his best team is.
But I think, so what you're saying is because this team isn't getting the result that you want, therefore, what? He doesn't know. Because to me, that's putting two different things together and making it and coming out. So you're putting two and two together and coming out with five.
No, I'm putting two and two together and coming up with four, no? So that performance yesterday, I think it...
No, but you're not coming up with four. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but what I'm saying is your conclusion is on the right lines, but I think you need to take it a step further.
And what I think is that step further?
I'm not an apologist for Roy. You know, I don't appreciate where England are either, but at the same time, I feel like it's quite harsh on him to make the conclusions that we are. The fact is that England got the result. The fact is that Russia definitely did play up in the first game. And there are other teams who had difficult first games as well. And, you know, France were minutes away from drawing 0-0 with Albania, but kept pushing. And the guys who set up those goals weren't on the pitch early on. But no one accused Deschamps of, not having the tactical acumen to start those guys, apart from Squawker Dave, but he's a moron. And I think the point was with that French camp was people were very clear. Oh, Deschamps has trained with and without these guys, and we just want you all to know he's definitely in control. But there's no one on the inside of the English camp, and maybe that's not Roy's fault, but that, you know, it is partly Roy's fault. Maybe he should be sort of saying, look, we're very clear what we want to do. And we know when to bring those players on.
The other way of communicating that is on the pitch. I'll give Hodgson credit for the way he was bold. He changed it halfway through the game, essentially. But it does seem that he doesn't quite know what his best team is. And you should know that. After all the qualifying we've been through, all the games, to suddenly, you know, have this system out there which is clear. It wasn't quite working against Wales. Credit, he changed it up. But I'm very interested to see in that final game against Slovakia how he starts the game, essentially. Who starts and why. I'm going to be out there watching it. So I'm very excited to see, hopefully, a better performance as well, essentially. Because that first half, you know, wasn't great, essentially. Of course, there was another game on the yesterday night. Not just England. And then momentous win against Wales. Germany-Poland. Now, I didn't get a chance to see this one myself. Obviously, you were on TFR Live.
So I didn't get a chance to see it myself. I was too busy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too busy doing
too busy talking to kids.
The irony of that show is you sit there and it's like, oh, it's the watch-along show. You know, you don't actually get to watch the game.
Then you make huge sweeping statements about the match.
Because at the end, they're like, okay, now give your conclusion on the match. You're like, wow, I just really saw the goals, really. I didn't really get a sense of the tactical battle that was going on. In terms of Germany, Poland, though, it did end a draw. From what I saw watching it, you know, I probably saw more than you watching it out of the corner of my eye.
You probably did.
You know, bit of a defensive masterclass from the likes of Jerome Boateng, but a few chances missed by Poland that maybe they should have scored.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think Poland are a side, and I've said this, who are sort of coming to, you know, they're coming to an apex in terms of this generation. And I think they've realised that because, again, they've evolved from 4 years ago when they were a young, not immature side, but slightly younger, naive team. And here we are.
The other momentous win, aside from England, of course, was Northern Ireland beating Ukraine 2-0, dropping Carl Lafferty, Michael O'Neill, and it paid off.
Yeah, it really did. I really enjoyed watching Northern Ireland in this one. And, you know, I know that the scoreline was slim, and, you know, what I find unusual is people sort of lambasting Roy Hodgson for this, but then being like, go on, Northern Ireland, you got that goal. I suppose it's the expectation in the tournament, isn't it? But the Northern Ireland fans seem grateful, whereas the England fans, less so.
There's certain expectations, isn't there? I mean, that is literally the first ever time Northern Ireland have won in the European Championship.
Yeah.
So it is a massive result. They've obviously got to play Germany on Tuesday now. They're third in the group. They're 1 point behind Germany and Poland. So maybe a draw will be enough to sort of, you know, almost guarantee one of those best third place finishes.
I think that probably will. Because, you know, I don't think... Well, the fact is Ukraine can't really come back because they're four goals down. I think they're minus three or four, I think, on goal difference. I still think, though, Northern Ireland's final game, they could end up finishing in the top two positions.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
If they finished Northern Ireland, if they finish Jesus Christ, can't even talk. If Northern Ireland win, they're going to be guaranteed first or second.
If I think they'll draw, though.
Ah, okay. If they draw, that would be nuts. I think that would be a pretty good result if they manage to draw.
I think not they'll draw. And,
They'll face the winner of Group C if they finish third. Or they could finish face the winner of Group A, which, you know, looks like it might be France, which would be interesting. Today's fixtures, though, we've got Spain-Turkey. That's the evening game. Obviously, Spain, not a massively convincing win in their first game over the Czech Republic. Turkey, obviously, having lost to Croatia, will be looking to get 3 points on the board. How do you see this one going?
I've sort of characterised Spain in the sense that they are a side who they are. I think they're quite a cerebral team. I think they definitely know they're quite calculating in that sense. You almost feel them like stalking their prey for the first hour of the game, and you know, they pass it around. It feels similar to that Barcelona vibe of a few years ago, where, you know, people are just like, they're gonna score any minute. And then when they do, you're almost unsurprised. But it's quite a different team, I think, to that one that happened a few years ago. I don't think people are particularly happy with the way that Spain have gone, because I don't feel people think they've evolved enough. So I still think that there are a lot of question marks in the Spanish media over how well they're going to do at this tournament, considering how they sort of collapsed out the last one. And then I think a lot of people aren't sort of happy with only getting a 1-0. In the last game. So I think in this game, it's going to be interesting to see how Spain face up against what was a very intense Turkey side in the last match. I mean, you know, you saw Turkey. I characterised them against Croatia as head and heart. The head was Croatia and the heart was Turkey. So if Spain looked to keep possession and Turkey utterly harried them in the last way, the game, the way they did in the last game, I think we're in for a really exciting match.
Victory will secure them a place in the round of 16 for Spain.
I think they'll ultimately get that, because I think you know, they've got the passing acumen to sort of outthink Turkey in that sense, which is disappointing, because actually I'd love to see Turkey go through.
Turkey haven't beaten Spain for 52 years.
I mean, it's not like they play each other every 2 weeks, but
Spain have won 4 and Turkey have won 1.
Okay, so they played 5 times in 50 years.
Yeah, in total.
Great.
But, you know, when you spin it like that, it sounds really good. You know,
that's irrelevant.
50 years. Yeah. It's incredible.
1,000 years.
Yeah. Croatia, Czech Republic are obviously playing
earlier. That'd be a great game, won't it?
Yeah, everyone's high on Croatia. I think after that first performance, everyone was very impressed. And you could sort of see just how good they were. A lot of people's dark horses to go through. So I'm excited to see Modric again, Rakitic, and see if they can similarly impress. But the game I'm most excited about, Lawrence, I have to say, is Italy-Sweden.
Why? Now,
I'm really excited because I was so taken aback almost by how well Italy played against Belgium, the way they executed their game plan. I wasn't expecting much. I don't think anyone was.
Can I say one thing before we do move on? Before we move on from Croatia, Czech Republic.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to be interested to see Czech Republic play is because obviously Czech Republic held Spain. You know, that's no mean feat in itself. I'll be interested to see how they stifle the guys who only scored one goal in the first match and didn't look like they created an awful lot.
Yeah, well, they held Spain until the last, right, when Gerard Piqué was...
Yeah, but then I'm wondering, you know, in the same way that Croatia played Turkey, although the way that Turkey played Croatia was actually very intense, so I'm wondering if you don't play them with the same intensity, you going to come out with the same... are you going to come out with the same result? Anyway, back to your intensity, your exciting game.
Italy, yes. I'm intrigued, because obviously... That Sweden result, Sweden Republic of Ireland, the 1-1 draw, didn't really suit either team. So Sweden are going to need to win, essentially. Unless, we'll see how the Belgium game goes, because Belgium now is almost an unknown quantity in terms of a lot of question marks after that game. Are they going to come back stronger now, refocused against Republic of Ireland and sort of live up to their billing? Or is it all downhill from here, essentially? And they're going to be one of the big scalps to go out in the group stages. Wait to be seen. But for this game, I'm excited to see if Italy can almost put on more of a convincing performance and take down the Sweden side. I mean, what are you expecting to see?
I think it's going to be... I think it's, obviously we're going to see what Zlatan has to offer. But against that back line, I think it's going to be a wonderful... I think you're probably looking at Italian defensive masterclass. You know, you've got the real BBC there. Bonucci, Barzagli, Chiellini. Yeah.
I'd like to see them be, obviously they defended, as you say, masterfully against Belgium and execute the game plan well.
But then they didn't really need to be masterful against Belgium, did they? Because it wasn't like Belgium particularly challenged them.
But I'd like to see them be maybe a little bit more almost expansive. I know that's not necessarily the Italian way.
Yeah.
And it was a very impressive start. I want them to essentially show us why. A lot of people after that first game are saying, bloody hell, you know, Italy could go all the way here. You know, they're a lot better than we thought.
They genuinely could. But let me just say, I mean, looking at Italy's squad, they've definitely got people that can come in and sort of replace these guys, but not to the same level. But there are two of their back line. I think it's Chiellini and Bonucci are on yellow cards. If they pick up a yellow card, then they go. They're out of the next game, which is obviously in the next round. So that sort of takes away from some of that strength. Now you could probably drop someone back, like maybe one of the two fullbacks could drop back, but that definitely takes away. And if they're playing someone like Zlatan and they're playing teams where they need to be physical and they possibly are going to need to make fouls at times in order to take out players, then we'll see how well they can defend.
You don't want
to lose one of those guys in the next match.
Yeah, a win will send Italy through to last 16. Obviously, a defeat basically throw that group wide open, essentially. Jonathan Guidetti expected to start for Sweden, so maybe they're going to go for a more attacking approach to try and get that win. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. 2 o'clock. Stop work stops. Let's watch Italy-Sweden.
Is that what happens at TFR?
Well, just sort of the telly's on the background, essentially, and everyone, the productivity goes down, is what I'd say.
Do you know that there was a directive just the other day by the working board or whatever it is in England?
Give people time off.
Yeah, not to give them time off. This is what's fascinating, is not give them time off, it's to allow their staff to watch the game.
Yeah.
So staff are allowed to watch the game in the office.
What, do no work and then you just sort it?
Essentially, yeah.
That's what I like.
Isn't that a little bit weird? Like, if you would... The weird thing was people were tweeting like, yeah, our boss let us do this. And you're like, yeah, of course he did. there was that town in Wales. We obviously didn't cover this because we were talking earlier. There was that town in Wales that renamed, I think it was called Bala, renamed itself Bale for the entirety of the Euros.
Sorry, say that again.
So there was a town in Wales which renamed itself from Bala to Bale for the Euros.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
And did you know that I think also for the day, the opening day of let me find this. Irish.
Are you talking about Ireland? The airport was it the airport renamed, was it?
Yeah. Something like that? I heard this on the Ramble, so I'm sort of stealing their content. Was it
Belfast City Airport? Was temporarily renamed after Kyle Lafferty. Normally named after George Best. But yeah, Kyle Lafferty got the honour to mark the country's first fixture as a European Championship. So there you have it. Good stuff.
And then
what should England rename? Should we rename something?
Wayne Rooney Airport, surely.
I don't know. Airports don't seem glamorous enough.
Airports I think it's
Big Rune. Big Ben should be called Big Rune. For the tournament, you know, his face.
Peter Crouch was still in the team.
His face could be the clock face, you know. It could work. If England gets to the final, I think we should start a campaign.
Surely Liverpool save that. And then if they win, then they rename whatever clock it is on the town hall, the Jurgen clock.
Oh, yes.
So that's much better. You always want to find something that's got wordplay. So we need to find maybe a river, like the... No, there isn't anything that sounds like Rooney.
You can almost hear the cogs whirring.
There's got to be some good wordplay. If you guys can come up with anything in the world, anything in the Euros that can be renamed from that country for another player.
Yeah, but it has to be a play on words.
Just change the name
of the airport to Carl at the airport. It's not good enough.
Yeah.
It has to rhyme with it. It has to be something going on. Otherwise,
could it be if there's sort of you know, like say there's a road in Italy which you know maybe a certain player scores a goal late, you call it the El Shaarawy motorway.
That's pretty bad, I gotta say.
That is pretty bad, but at the same time I think it's brilliant.
Lovely stuff. Finally, we were talking about Jürgen Klopp there. Did you see Jürgen Klopp's birthday cake? It was his birthday yesterday that Liverpool gave him.
No.
oh, you got to check it out. It's horrifying. It's terrifying. It looks like a gremlin version of Jürgen Klopp.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's quite impressive, guys. I recommend just typing in Jürgen Klopp cake on,
brilliant.
On Google, seeing the cake that Liverpool baked in for his 49th birthday. It was a very lifelike sort of, it was almost like a cake bust of his face, but also terrifying as well.
God, that is quite, why would you want to knife your own face? Go on then.
It's quite surreal, Jürgen Klopp, you know, tucking into that one. But guys, definitely check that out. For now though, that is all for the front three today. Hope you've enjoyed listening. Squawker Dave will be back tomorrow, hopefully.
With the real stats.
Subbed in Rory today. Hope you enjoyed that. Do go and check out Rory's channel, the Chelsea Fan channel on YouTube. You can also follow him on Twitter at Chelsea Rory. He's following England for the entirety of Euro 2016. He's very much hoping to go through to knockout stages, which is looking good so far. I'm going to join him on Monday. Maybe dial me up on Monday on Skype, Lawrence. I'll give you some fan reaction and stuff.
That would actually be good. If we can do that, that'd be great. Thanks,
Adam. I'll try and make a little video as well or something.
It's nice that you can take some time off to go and see some games.
What do you mean? What are you trying to say?
No, I'm just saying it's nice.
It's holiday. I wish TFR were paying for it, but I'm forking out my own hard-earned to go and follow England on the road.
You said forking.
What's wrong with that?
No, I was just checking.
Have you ever seen England away, Lawrence? I've never seen England away.
I've seen England at home, but I've never seen England away.
What a way to answer that question.
And I will be home for this again. So
yeah. Don't be bitter.
I'm not bitter. I'm genuinely happy for you. It's just my tone, which is the issue.
There's probably tickets for... There must be tickets for... If the Republic of Ireland... either way, I might try and get tickets to the last Republic of Ireland game as well, if I can. Because, you know, everyone says Republic of Ireland, best fans in Europe, best fans in the world. That last group game, whether they're going out, which is kind of like the last hurrah, you know, everyone's going to be going crazy. Or if they've gone through... Then, you know, it'd be an even bigger party almost. That'd be a good one.
We so try either way, you can't lose.
We could get tickets for that, you know. We could go out.
And then, take Dave as well.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Let us know which games we should go to. I'd love to know a game to go to. I'll go.
Good stuff. Guys, tweet us out the front three. Let us know your thoughts on the Euros so far. Who the players who've been exciting you, the teams that have impressed you. Looking forward to today's games. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it all. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ciao.